Lots of reaction to the 490 Tamil refugee seekers who arrived on that boat. Lots of questions about the immigration system. Those problems need fixing. And what can you do? How can you make sure that there's a regular process of delay and that these repeated appeals don't destroy the entire system? Scott Newark on the line with us. He's a former executive director of the Canadian Police Association. He also served as director of operations for the Washington-based Investigative Project on Terrorism. Good morning. Welcome to CJD.
Morning.
What is the biggest problem that we have with our refugee system? We have a reputation for being compassionate and helping refugees, but what's the biggest problem in our system?
Probably the multiple layers of appeal and the delay inherent in the system. When you combine that with that generosity that you referred to, it becomes, frankly, a target of abuse, and as I think this case demonstrates, it's recognized around the world that if you take certain actions like these folks have, you're going to be able to take advantage of the system and potentially get a benefit that you otherwise would not be able to get.
Now, when people say the R word, they get to stay here and they get to have lawyers and they get to have appeals. It can go on for quite some time. Is there any chance of sending people back immediately, no matter how bad their reputation, if you find out that they, in fact, are bona fide terrorists? Do they still get to stay?
No. Well, this is Canada, so there's always an exception. But there are people who meet defined categories of what's called inadmissibility, are literally inadmissible to Canada. And among those grounds are security grounds. So if there were people, for example, who were found to be members of the Tamil Tigers, they are by law inadmissible to Canada. People might be shocked to know that notwithstanding that, the law does permit the issuance of what's called a temporary residence permit to these people, to allow them, okay, even though you're inadmissible to Canada, we're going to give you this permit to enter Canada, and you can appeal our decision while you're in Canada.
So no one is being sent back immediately.
Depending on the nature of what the inadmissibility is, there are fewer temporary residence permits issued for people who are inadmissible on security grounds. But there are other grounds like organized criminality or serious criminality or criminality itself, and there are a significant number of those that are actually given these permits to then appeal the process inside Canada. And by the way, Tommy, it's important to appreciate, too, some people, because of the nature of the inadmissibility, and again, we'll use the security inadmissibility if they were found to be Tamil Tigers, they're not eligible to claim refugee status. That sort of makes the point, though. This preliminary upfront screening is all the more important, and our existing system has procedures for that, which this kind of an effort deliberately avoids. Okay, that kind of upfront screening and analysis of people to determine if they're eligible to enter Canada as either a refugee claimant or even as to get a visa as a visitor, whereupon they could claim refugee status. These folks, by getting on this ship and coming here, are avoiding that process.
Okay, let's follow this process. Let's pick one person. We're going to choose one person. This person they discover is an absolute bona fide member of the Tamil Tigers. Walk me through what happens to him when he got off the boat.
What should happen is...
Don't tell me what should happen. What actually does happen to him?
Well,
let's follow the steps.
So I can't tell you exactly what does happen. I can tell you what's happening on this case,
okay,
which is so far that everybody has been detained, which is appropriate. Okay, that doesn't have to happen, but it does. It has happened in this case. They have yet to make, to my understanding, they have yet to make determinations as to anybody's inadmissibility. If they made a determination that somebody was inadmissible because they were a member of the Tamil Tigers, there are two options. One is they would just say, you're not admissible, we're sending you back to where you came from, which is something they got to figure out where that is.
And how would they send them back? By plane?
Probably, yes.
And immediately, as soon as they've made that determination?
They certainly should. They certainly should. And that's sort of the point here, is that because people have a right to appeal those determinations, and for people who are doing it this way to avoid the screening, I would suggest that the law needs to be changed so that you're ineligible to make an appeal of that determination while you're in Canada. You can appeal it, but you can only do it outside of Canada. Right now, the law doesn't mandate that. It should, in my opinion.
We're going to continue our discussion. If you have any questions about it, Scott Newark is my guest, 514-790-0991. Scott Newark, a former Alberta Crown Prosecutor, former Executive Director of the Canadian Police Association. We're talking about our refugee system. If you have any questions, 514-790-0991. Is mass refugee arrival a criminal business enterprise, Scott?
As an activity, it's recognized as something that organized crime groups are involved in. In particular, with this one, it's also something that the Tamil Tigers have a history of some involvement with as well, too. So there's that aspect to it that also increases the concern. And you know, if the reports of the fees being charged anywhere from $35,000 to $50,000 are correct, you know, these folks aren't doing this as a charity. If there are people, and there expect to be, if they are actually legitimate refugees who don't have that kind of money, they will be expected to perform services when they're in Canada to pay back that money, and that raises security concerns for everybody who lives here as well, too. It's a terrible exploitation as well of people, among the most vulnerable people, in how they repay that money.
William on the line, good morning.
Yeah, Tommy, these people are just trying to save their lives. I just want to mention that the Supreme Court of Canada has said that people who arrive in Canada have the right to make refugee claims, and they must be given a fair hearing. They must also be given due process, which includes the right of appeal. So these people cannot be rushed through just helter-skelter and given the bum's rush.
Okay, that's actually not correct, sir. The case you're referring to is called the Singh case that says that people who are in Canada, and the context of it was in a refugee claim, but that said that they have the right to charter rights whether they're citizens or not. And while that's true, that doesn't mean that they have charter rights in the same context as everybody else. A 5-year-old in Canada has charter rights, but that doesn't mean he can use the charter rights to force the government to let him drive a car. The Supreme Court of Canada, in a couple of cases since then, even most recently on one of the security certificate cases, has made it very clear people who are non-citizens do not have an absolute right to enter or remain in Canada. And so the trick is, while respecting the process that you're describing, and you're correct, and we already make distinctions between different natures of individuals based on their circumstances, we can tailor legislation specifically to people like this who attempt to avoid that kind of preliminary screening so we can determine exactly who they are. We can do it. And frankly, what bothers me about this is that, you know, the government has yet to do that, to actually carefully draft legislation that recognizes these kinds of circumstances and turn it into a deterrent rather than an incentive.
514-790-0991, the number to call. There's a text message that's quite interesting from Joe. He says, now I know why the U.S. is concerned about Canada being the hub for U.S. terrorism. I think the United States should be concerned about themselves. The 19 hijackers didn't come in from Canada. They had no problem getting into the United States.
Correct.
They had no problem taking flying lessons, one-way flying lessons in the United States. Blaming Canada is an absurdity. They obviously are unable.
It's remarkable how long that myth has remained, too, eh?
Well, because I think that's because Hillary never apologized. Hillary Clinton never apologized for saying it at the beginning when they blamed us.
Well, Janet Napolitano, as recently as a matter of about a year ago, was still making some reference to some of the hijackers coming through Canada, which has become an urban myth.
You're right, and it's completely false. Ron on the line from Dorval. Good morning.
Hi there. It's difficult for me, by the way. I have two questions. What are the consequences to these human smugglers? Like, for instance, this boat from Sri Lanka in Victoria, was it confiscated? Was the crew arrested? And my second question is like this. You just touched on it a little bit. Let's say some terrorists do get into Canada under false pretenses as refugees or whatever, like the Kadar family. How does Canada get them out? And is that even a possibility?
There's an awful lot in those questions,
yes,
sir, but let me start with the first
consequences
one.
For the crew.
Dealing with the crew. The Immigration Refugee Protection Act creates offenses essentially for people who are organizing this mass migration of people to arrive here without the necessary documents. Yes, they do create offenses. Our system, however, has a tradition of very broad discretion in sentencing. So although theoretically the person could be sentenced to life imprisonment, in our system that also means they could get probation. Okay, so I'm not a huge supporter of mandatory minimum sentences, but this is one of the cases where it makes sense to actually have that, so it serves as a deterrent. On this specific case, though, and here's what illustrates why this is some of a problem. Guess what? The crew appears to have blended into all of the other people who are claiming refugee status, and nobody is coming forward to say who the crew actually are.
So there is no crew. We don't know who the crew is.
Not as of yet.
Part of
what's being investigated.
Okay, this investigation, the person sits down, you ask them questions, and they give you an answer. You take it for granted what they're telling you is true? I mean,
No. How
do you check up on what they're saying?
That's exactly why we have screening processes.
Right.
away from our borders. What makes this particularly challenging is that we're doing this literally at our border, as opposed to where we have the time to check out all of this information. That's exactly the
So point. If it's not within the border, where is it going to be? We're going to ask that question. We'll continue our discussion with Scott Newark. Our discussion with Scott Newark, who writes on security, immigration, and justice issues for the McDonald Laurier Institute, 514-790-0991. A text message we'll get to in a moment from James, but if we don't interview them on the territory within Canada's borders, where do we interview them?
Literally offshore, at the point where the individual is seeking to make the refugee, start to engage the refugee process. So if it was in Sri Lanka, there's a process that you can go through there. If it was, as is largely believed, in Tamil Nadu State in South India, the same sort of thing applies. There's multiple categories of refugee classes, all of which contemplate this initial method in which you engage the process. I was struck yesterday, there was a great letter in the Ottawa Citizen newspaper from a lawyer who represents people, and he was making the point that, you know, he represents people who are going through the process, and how frustrating it is to see this kind of a thing where individuals just simply choose not to go through the process, where his clients are actually doing it and waiting, you know, extended period of time. You gotta have some sympathy, I think, for that perspective. From my perspective, however, of a security issue, it makes it a heck of a lot more difficult to determine, number one, whether there are any security concerns in relation to these folks, and number two, whether you're dealing with people who, frankly, are refugees at all. Okay, and that's why the origin of where this ship actually came from is extremely significant. That's also something that's under investigation.
So there's lots of investigations going on.
Yes.
An interesting text message from James. He says, by the way, the Tamil Tigers are freedom fighters, and you should compare apples to apples. There's a lot of people in the Tamil community who would agree with his assessment.
Okay. Well, let me put it this way. One of the proudest things I was involved in when I worked with the federal government was having the Tamil Tigers listed as a terrorist organization. They're a bunch of thugs. And they are also, particularly in this country as well, too, who they victimize are largely their own people. Don't make any mistake about it, folks. They're thugs.
514-790-0991. Start talk. Text your comments to 514-800. Do you think that there's going to be any movement right now as we watch what happens, all these investigations about these 490 Tamil refuge seekers? Is the rest of the world watching? I mean, are more ships coming?
There are definitely reports of that, and I think that raises what is, in the long run, among the most important points. By all means, we need to do things here domestically so as to convert what is an incentive now for this to occur into a deterrent. But operationally, we need to work a lot more closely with people, other jurisdictions around the world where these ships are originating from. There's been media reports already of, shall we say, the inaction on some of the information that was available. And we need to, I don't know specifically, for example, whether the same kinds of offenses exist in India as they do here, if the ship was coming out of India. But that's the kind of stuff that we need to work on so we can operationally target the stuff before the ships leave, as opposed to trying to deal with it once they hit our shore.
Now, once they are here, I want to get back into how the investigation is conducted. How difficult is that investigation to find out if what they're saying is true or not? I mean, how are you going to find out who the crew is? If the crew is denying that they're the crew.
No kidding. And everybody else is clamming up. That's sort of the difficulty, isn't it? I mean, they're going to be going through the documents. There's already reports about people who don't have any documents. I mean, that used to be one of the scams that was used years ago, especially out of Sri Lanka as well, too, where people would board the airplane. And appreciate, you got to have a visa to come from Sri Lanka to Canada. Okay, to get on the aircraft, you're going to have to show that visa. Part of the benefit of doing it this way is, of course, you don't have to do that. And if somebody's got, you know, think about it. If somebody's got $35,000 to pay for a ship ride, they've certainly got the money to pay for an airplane ticket. Okay, we're literally going to have to go through whatever documentation is there, try to verify it with the originating jurisdiction that issued the documentation, try to corroborate stories. If people are saying, for example, well, yeah, I was in this particular refugee camp, and it turns out they were actually in Tamil Nadu State in India, that of itself is grounds for inadmissibility. It's providing
right.
False information, although it's not grounds for denying somebody refugee eligibility, and perhaps it should be in these circumstances. That's the kind of detail that people are going to have to go through. And imagine how our already overburdened system, you drop 492 people on it, and you